mine as he sipped his coffee. The slight contact sent tingles shooting up my arm. "Did Chef get any food?" I asked. "Since you said you came up here to get it."
"He let me wolf down a pastry," he said. "But don't tell anyone. No one's supposed to eat on this boat until breakfast is officially served."
"Don't worry," I promised. "Your secret is safe with me."
"I know," he said. "We've been through enough by now that you should know how much I trust you."
I tried to smile, despite the guilt weighing down my chest. Because Blake was right. We should trust each other. When we first started developing our elemental powers, we'd gone to each other first. We were the first to fight against a monster that escaped from Kerberos, and we stopped it together. Plus, he saved me. He saved all of us from getting stuck on the land of the Lotus Eaters forever. Thinking about the island reminded me about how I'd killed that man with black energy. I kept seeing the murderous look on his face as he tried to strangle me to death, and hearing how he'd laughed when he thought I was taking my last breaths. Then, there was the way his eyes had gone empty the moment I'd touched him. The thud as his body hit the ground. It had been so easy and natural for me to end his life forever. Not just him, but his friend, too. I'd run that arrow through his head without thinking twice. And afterward, I'd felt a sense of achievement. Was this who I was now, a killer? I shivered at the thought. I didn't want to kill anyone. But if I hadn't, they would have killed me first. What choice did I have?
"Are you all right?"
Blake asked, his question interrupting my thoughts.
"You got really quiet all of a sudden."
"Sort of." I stared into my tea, as if it could tell me whether or not I should be honest with Blake about my ability. But the tea wasn't going to give me the answer. I needed to trust my instincts. And right now, I believed with all of my heart that I could trust Blake with my life. When I looked back up and met his eyes, I was determined to go through with this. "What do you know about black energy?" I asked, feeling stronger now that I'd come to the decision about what I was going to do.
"Not much."
He scrunched his eyebrows, clearly taken aback that I'd asked.
"Why?"
"I'm just curious," I said. "I know it exists, because Kate mentioned it to me once, when I first moved here. But no one ever talks about it, and I've never known why."
"That's because only the most powerful witches in the world can access black energy," he said. "And even they haven't used it for centuries, since it was made illegal in the Middle Ages. If any witch is caught using it, they'll be stripped of their powers and locked away forever. It's rumored to be a fate worse than death."
"But why?" I asked, since I already knew all of that. "What can they do with black energy that makes it illegal?" I hated having to ask this way, because given my experience with black energy, I already knew what it did. But I couldn't come out and say it. Despite choosing to trust Blake, I still had to be careful.
"It inflicts torture on others."
He lowered his voice as if just speaking about it was a crime.
"The worst kind of torture imaginable."
"That's it?" I asked. "It doesn't kill?" He scrunched his eyebrows as if he needed to think about it.
"It might make someone try to kill themselves," he said. "But no, the energy itself doesn't kill. The pain it causes isn't physical. It's all in the person's head."
"Oh." I deflated, taking a sip of my tea in the hopes that Blake wouldn't see how confused I was. Because what he was describing was different than what I could do. What I could do was worse.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
he asked.
"I mean, I didn't want to bring it up unless you did. But I saw what happened back on that island, with those two pirates who attacked you. I was running over to help you, but then...
What did you see? I asked, my voice rising in panic. Did he already know about what I could do? Was he going to turn me in?
I saw them strangling you, he said. There were so many Lotus Eaters in front of me, and I got so mad when I saw what those pirates were doing to you that I used the flames from the bonfire to burn everyone who was blocking my path. I would have shot the pirates from there if I didn't worry that I might accidentally hit you instead. Then I was running over to help you, and I saw you push one of them down, and then ram an arrow straight through the other one's face.
I looked down at my feet, ashamed that Blake had seen me in that moment. But I was also relieved, because from what he'd said, he didn't realize what I'd actually done to that first pirate. He had no idea that I'd killed him, too. Then his hand was on my chin, and when he forced me to look up at him, it wasn't disappointment that I saw in his eyes. It was respect, or even more so, admiration.
You did what you had to do back there, he said, his voice strong. Your resilience kept you alive. We had to kill those people. It was self-defense.
I just wish I could have healed them all, I said, like how I healed Ethan.
Even if you did, where would they have gone?
He asked.
Most of them have been trapped on that island for centuries. Their families are long gone by now. They wouldn't even know how to have a life in our world.
I know, I said, and I smiled at him. A real smile for the first time this morning. And I haven't had a chance to tell you this before now, but thank you, Blake.
For what?
He asked.
You saved yourself without my help.
I'm talking about before that, I said. You snapped to it on that island when no one else did, and made sure we didn't get trapped there like everyone else. And you believed in me when I thought I could heal Ethan and Rachel from the lotus poisoning. Sometimes, it feels like you believe in me more than I believe in myself.
I wouldn't go that far.
He smirked and nudged my shoulder with his.
You were pretty badass when you fought those pirates.
About that, I said, and he held my gaze, watching me like he would value anything I said, no matter what. I swallowed away any lingering doubt, because this was my chance. If I was going to tell him the truth, it should be now.
What?
He brushed a strand of hair off my face and took my hand in his.
What's going on?
I opened my mouth, ready to tell him. But before I had a chance, the door banged open and we both whipped our heads around to see who it was. Kate stood in the doorway, her breathing heavy, her eyes wide in panic. You guys have to come inside, she said, not moving from where she stood. Why? I held Blake's hand tighter, as if he could protect me from whatever was coming. What happened? Nothing yet, she said. But it's about to, because we're about to pass between Scylla and Charybdis. Chapter 28. Blake stormed into the dining room, Kate and I following close behind. Hypatia and the others had already gathered around the table, all with worried expressions on their faces. The engines on the yacht had stopped, and the anchor had been dropped, presumably to give us time to come up with a plan. But despite the panic rising up my chest, I tried to remain calm. There had to be another route. Something less dangerous. We would figure it out together.
Scylla and Charybdis?
Blake ran his fingers through his hair, pacing around the room.
Really? You couldn't have given us more advance warning on this one?
I didn't want to worry you, because there's nothing that you all can do,
Hypatia said calmly.
We must pass through Scylla and Charybdis to get to the island of Thrinakia, where Helios's sacred cattle roam.
Why? I asked, joining them at the table. Thrinakia is an island. Can't we go around Scylla and Charybdis and approach the island from another direction?
No, Hypatia shook her head. The Strait of Scylla and Charybdis is one of old magic, and there's no way around it. But I have a plan, and I promise that the five of you, plus your two demigod friends, will be kept safe no matter what.
Hold up one second.
Chris glanced at Kate's copy of the Odyssey and pressed his lips together, as if embarrassed about whatever he was about to say.
I know this isn't a great time to admit this, but I didn't actually read the Odyssey last year.
You didn't?
Kate's mouth dropped open. You would have thought from looking at her that Chris had admitted to cold-blooded murder.
The book was tough to get through, and kind of boring, so I just skimmed the spark notes,
he said.
No big deal. I passed the class. But do any of you want to remind me about what Scylla and Charybdis are?
Kate picked up the book and opened to a bookmarked page.
The part about Scylla and Charybdis and Helios's cattle is all found in Book 12 of the Odyssey, she said,
although I wasn't sure why she'd bothered to open the book, since she continued on from memory.
Odysseus and his men have to pass through a dangerous strait to reach Helios's island. On one side of the strait is Charybdis, and on the other is Scylla. Scylla is a huge monster with six heads, who will pluck six people from the yacht and devour them alive. Charybdis will create a gigantic whirlpool that will open up so she can gulp the yacht down whole. The strait is so narrow that anyone passing through is forced to sail close to one of the monsters. No matter what, people will die.
Stuck between a rock and a hard place, Danielle muttered.
Exactly, Kate nodded.
What did Odysseus do?
Chris asked.
He managed to get past the monsters, right?
Odysseus sacrificed six of his men to Scylla,
Hypatia answered.
Sailing near Charybdis is too dangerous. So we must do as Odysseus did and stay close to Scylla's mountain. Six members of our staff will stand on the top deck. Scylla will take them, and the rest of us will continue on our mission.
You're going to sacrifice six of your own staff? I asked, sitting back in shock. And they're okay with this?
Once I speak with them, they will be, she said solemnly.
You're going to use magic to compel them to sacrifice themselves for us. I posed it as a statement, not as a question. Hypatia looked down at the table and said nothing. And I knew that my guess was correct.
No.
I shook my head, thinking of the friendly chef who'd given me my morning tea.
Would he be one of the ones killed?
Absolutely not. You can't ask them to do that.
It's my job to ensure that your mission is a success, Hypatia said sharply. That means keeping you and your friends alive. So unless one of you comes up with a better plan in the next hour, then we do as I say.
Blake stopped pacing, and I could tell by the light in his eyes that he'd had an idea.
Scylla and Charybdis are monsters, he said, walking forward and placing his palms flat on the table. So, instead of avoiding them, why don't we just attack them?
Rachel laughed, the first sound she'd made all morning, and we all turned to look at her.
Do you have something to add?
Danielle asked, glaring at her. For once, I was grateful for her icy tone. Rachel pulled her hair over her shoulders and smiled at Danielle, apparently not intimidated by her in the slightest.
I know you're all more powerful than most witches because you were gifted with your abilities by the gods or whatever. But come on, Scylla and Charybdis are two of the most ancient monsters alive.
Do you really think you're strong enough to kill them?
We're on a mission to slay the Hydra, so we can steal its blood, Blake reminded her. I don't see how this is any different.
Well, it is a little different, Kate said softly, as if she were worried that we weren't going to like what she was about to say. A Hydra has been slayed before, by Hercules, but no one has ever killed Scylla or Charybdis. In fact, it says right here. She paused, leafing through the pages of the Odyssey until she found what she was searching for. When Circe is warning Odysseus about Scylla and Charybdis, Odysseus had the same idea as Blake. He wanted to fight Scylla. But Circe said, Scylla's an immortal devastation, terrible, savage, wild. There's no fighting her, no defense. Just flee the creature. That's the only way. Kate closed the book and placed it back down, her face hard with resolve. We can't kill Scylla, she said. We just have to get past her alive. She'll let the yacht by once she takes her 6 sacrifices. Perhaps, maybe Hypatia's plan is the best.
I'm not happy about it, Hypatia said. But isn't this the meaning of being trapped between Scylla and Charybdis? There is no good choice. There's simply a bad choice and a worse one. We cannot escape unscathed.
Except you're forgetting one important thing, Blake said, and we all turned to him to hear what he had to say. Odysseus and his crew were all humans. We're witches with elemental powers, and Nicole, Ethan, and Rachel are demigods. We should be able to get through this without losing anyone on this boat. If we can't, then I don't know what we're doing here at all.
The energy from what he'd said filled the room, but only for a few seconds, because then we were right back to where we were before, sitting around the table, stumped about the best way to approach this problem.
I have an idea, Danielle finally said, sitting straighter. Charybdis lives in the ocean, and she's dangerous because when she opens her mouth, she creates a whirlpool. What if we sail on the side of Charybdis, and if she opens her mouth, I'll use my powers to control the water so it doesn't suck us in?
Do you think you're strong enough to do that? I asked her.
I wish I could say yes, she said. But honestly, I'm not sure.
We can't risk it, Kate said. In the Odyssey, Circe tells Odysseus that if he's there when Charybdis opens her mouth, that not even the earthquake god could save him from disaster. The earthquake god is Poseidon, so if a god like Poseidon, the king of the sea, wouldn't have been able to save Odysseus' ship, I don't see how you could manage it.
If you fail, our ship would be crushed, and we would all die, Hypatia added. We can't risk it.
What if we avoided the water altogether?
Chris sat straighter, as if he had the best idea ever.
What if I flew the boat over Charybdis? That way, when she opens her mouth, we won't get sucked in.
I waited for him to laugh, or say that he was joking. When he didn't, I asked, You seriously think that you're strong enough to lift an entire yacht?
Maybe,
he said.
If I drink a lot of yellow energy water first to help me focus.
Come on, Chris, Danielle said, rolling her eyes. Let's be practical. Back at training, you were barely able to lift a car for half a minute, and afterward you were so wiped out that you couldn't use your powers for the rest of the day.
Is this true? Hypatia asked.
Yeah.
Chris shrugged and slumped back in his chair.
I guess it was a stupid idea.
We all nodded, the hope that had been in everyone's eyes after Blake's speech starting to dim. I hated the idea of having to sacrifice 6 members of the crew to Scylla. But maybe Hypatia was right. We didn't have another option. After all, if we didn't go through with this, and the Titans escaped Kerberos, then a lot more than 6 people were going to die. Perhaps it was worth sacrificing 6 people for the good of so many more.
It wasn't a stupid idea.
Ethan spoke up, which shocked me for a moment since he'd been quiet all morning.
Even though Rachel and I don't have power over the elements, we have our father on our side. And while Chris might not be able to lift a yacht, I bet Zeus could.
Except that Zeus isn't here, I pointed out.
He gave us each a pendant to use to call on him, if we ever needed his help, he said, casually. We're only supposed to use them for emergencies, but I'm pretty sure this would classify as an emergency.
I would say it does, Rachel said, twisting her pendant around her neck. I'd never noticed it before because she tucked it under her shirt. But now that I knew to look for them, I saw that Ethan wore one too. It reminded me of the pendant I'd found on my windowsill the day after retrieving the Book of Shadows. The sun, with an A carved on the back. I'd left it at a safe place at home because I didn't want to risk anything happening to it on this journey. But perhaps I could use the pendant to call on my dad, the same way that Ethan and Rachel called on theirs. It was worth a shot, but since I didn't have the pendant with me, I couldn't worry about it until we completed this mission and returned home.
Calling on Zeus might not be a bad idea, Kate said, looking more optimistic than she had all morning. He and Poseidon have a pretty intense sibling rivalry. And Charybdis is the daughter of Poseidon. She was completely loyal to her father, which made Zeus so angry that he changed her into the monster she is today. Zeus might like the idea of helping us thwart Charybdis on Poseidon's own turf.
At that moment, thunder rumbled so loudly that the entire boat vibrated, followed by a crack of lightning so bright that I would have sworn it had struck the front deck. Then someone pushed through the front doors and stepped into our living room. A tall, muscular man in jeans and a white t-shirt. A breeze whooshed through the air as he entered, and he watched us all with a knowing smirk, as if we should have been anticipating his arrival. With blonde hair down to his shoulders and a few days' scruff on his face, he reminded me of a more attractive version of Brad Pitt, if that was even possible.
That's one smart girl you've got on your hands, he said, motioning to Kate. But I would expect nothing else from a descendant of Athena.
Hi, Dad, Rachel said with a smile, her fingers still holding onto her pendant. I'd hoped you would come. Chapter 29. That's your dad? My eyes widened, and I stared at the guy who had just joined us on the yacht. You're Zeus?
The one and only,
he chuckled.
Let me guess, you expected me to look different, older, with white hair and a thick, bushy beard?
Well, yeah, I said. And I also always imagined you wearing a toga.
I find this much more comfortable.
He stuck his hands in his pockets, as if he were testing them out.
It's incredible how far clothing has come in the past century. I saved the formal attire for meetings on Mount Olympus.
Hypatia stood up with so much speed that I would have thought she'd never seen a deity before in her life. Thank you for coming here, sir. She cleared her throat and looked down at her hands, as if afraid to meet his eyes. As it sounds like you already know, we have a bit of a situation on our hands. Your children said they would ask for your help, and I hope they haven't bothered you.
No, no, of course not,
he said, waving the thought away.
No need for the formalities in a dress. It's all so human, don't you think?
Of course. Hypatia nodded, finally meeting his eyes. What should I call you then? He raised an eyebrow.
I would assume that you know my name.
Yes, of course, sir. Hypatia stuttered, and then she lowered herself into what I could only describe as a curtsy. I mean, Zeus. He chuckled, clearly amused.
I don't have much time here, so let's make this quick, he said. I'm aware of your dilemma, and I must say, Hypatia's plan sounds solid to me. By losing 6 of your crew to Scylla, the 5 of you will still be able to complete your mission. And trust me when I say that me and all the others on Olympus are rooting for your success. Since the entire purpose of this strait between Scylla and Charybdis is to teach a lesson in tough decisions, I was going to leave you to it and have you make this sacrifice. However, Kate here had quite a good point. No one has made it through the strait unharmed since Jason, and that was thousands of years ago. Ancient history.
He waved it away as if Jason's feats meant nothing anymore.
It's about time to piss off my brother Poseidon again, don't you think?
Yes, Kate nodded, a grin spreading across her face. Most definitely.
Except there's one problem, Zeus said. If I do this for you, Poseidon won't like it. He has quite the temper, and I wouldn't put it past him to lose all foresight and take it out on you just to get back on me. And if he brings disaster to your ship and everyone on board perishes, then we'll have a bigger problem on our hands, because we need at least some of you alive to reseal the portal to Kerberos. If all of you die, then the Titans will be released onto the Earth again, and none of us want that.
No, we don't, I said, and everyone else shook their heads in agreement.
Doesn't Charybdis only open up her mouth 3 times a day?
Blake asked. Kate nodded, and his eyes brightened, as if he were coming up with a plan.
What if we waited until nighttime and crossed over Charybdis's side of the strait while she was sleeping?
On average, Charybdis does only take her meals 3 times a day, Zeus said. But if she smells something delicious, like a boat full of witches and demigods, she won't be able to resist having a 4th meal. After all, mortals are her favorite food.
So we should proceed with Hypatia's plan then?
Danielle asked.
You could, Zeus said. Or you could use this.
With a flourish, he stuck his hand in his back pocket and pulled out a lifesaver mint.
A mint?
Danielle arched an eyebrow, looking at him as if he had a screw loose.
What are we supposed to do with that?
I wanted to tell her to have more respect. This was Zeus we were talking to. But I suppose that Danielle would always be Danielle, no matter what.
That's up for you to decide,
he said.
You see, this is more than your average mint. It's been infused with power. When any of the 5 of you start sucking on it, your powers will be increased 10-fold. The magic will last until the mint is gone, so for about 10 minutes. But of course, there's a catch, he added. It can only be used once. For instance, if you start sucking on it but take it out of your mouth before it's finished, you won't be able to use it again. The magic can only be ignited 1 time. Understand?
Chris smiled and stepped closer to Zeus, eyeing up the mint.
You mean that if I pop the mint right when we reach Charybdis, I'll be able to fly the yacht over her so we can pass through the strait without anyone getting hurt? If that's when you choose to use it, then yes,
Zeus said, dropping the mint into Chris's hand.
And don't tell Poseidon about this little gift I'm giving you. Let's have him believe that you got past Charybdis on your own, all right?
Deal,
Chris nodded.
Thanks for giving this to us. It'll help a lot.
Of course, Zeus said. I didn't want to miss the chance to give a descendant of mine a little glory. And kids,
he said, turning to Ethan and Rachel.
Good luck in the fight against the Hydra. Help bring Team Zeus some glory up on Olympus.
We will, Rachel smirked with a cockiness that matched her father's.
It shouldn't be hard,
Ethan added.
After all, it'll be 7 against 1. We've got this. I know you do,
Zeus agreed, backing towards the door.
Anyway, my job here is done, so it's time for me to head out. Best of luck out there.
Wait, I said, stepping forward to stop him. One more question before you leave? He paused, his raised eyebrow letting me know that he didn't have all day.
I swallowed down my anxiety about what I was about to ask, since it was now or never. Next time you see my father, can you let him know that I'm hoping to meet him? If he has any time, I asked, wringing my hands together. I know he's probably busy and everything, but it would mean a lot.
Of course, Zeus said, his eyes softer than they'd been since we'd met him. I can't promise what Apollo will do, but I will give him your message.
Thank you, I said. I really appreciate it. Then there was a flash of lightning, and as quickly as Zeus had arrived, he was gone. Chapter 30.
Was it just me, or did Zeus say that I was a descendant of his?
Chris asked, still holding tightly onto the mint.
He did say that, Kate agreed. He also said that I'm a descendant of Athena. I'd always hoped that might be the case, and now I know it's true. Wow, amazing.
If you're a descendant of Zeus, then that makes us relatives,
Ethan said to Chris.
Cool, man. Welcome to the family.
But very distant relatives, Rachel clarified, twisting her hair around her finger as she looked at Chris.
Probably from centuries ago. So untraceable that it doesn't matter.
Was she flirting with him? I glanced over at Kate. I'd always suspected Kate had a crush on Chris, although she was too shy to ever admit it. And the way she refused to look at either Chris or Rachel convinced me that my suspicion was correct. Rachel was flirting with Chris. And by the way Chris smiled back at her, he seemed to be into her, too.
So,
Chris said, pacing around the room, as hyped as ever.
I'll pop the mint once we're close to Charybdis. Fly us over the water and set us down on the other side of the strait. I've never done this before, so you all should probably brace yourselves. Are there seatbelts on this boat?
We're not going anywhere yet, Hypatia said, resuming her spot at the head of the table. Because first, we need to discuss how we plan on using this present from Zeus.
What do you mean?
Chris's forehead crinkled.
I'm going to suck on it and fly us over Charybdis so we can pass by her and Scylla without anyone getting hurt. That's why Zeus gave it to us.
Zeus was clear that if you took the mint when we reached the strait of Scylla and Charybdis, you would be able to use it for that purpose, Hypatia said. But he never said it was the only thing you could use it for. While your proposal is a good one, we have to be responsible and think through all of our options.
When else would we use it? Danielle asked.
In the fight against the Hydra?
We won't have any problem fighting the Hydra, Rachel said, brushing the idea away. After all, Hercules slayed the Hydra on his own.
But no one's ever fought Charybdis before, have they?
For the answer to that question, we all looked to Kate.
No, Kate shook her head. Both Scylla and Charybdis are ancient and immortal. They can't be killed. Like I said earlier, it isn't even advised to try. We just need to focus on getting past them with our yacht and everyone on it intact.
But didn't you hear what Zeus said?
Rachel asked.
He said he was rooting for us.
He trusts us to slay the Hydra, so that won't shock him much. But if we manage to slay Charybdis...
She smiled, as if she was already basking in the glory of it.
Think of how proud he would be then.
You cannot slay Charybdis, Hypatia said,
so calmly that it was clear this wasn't up for debate.
I'm here to guide you on a mission, and that mission is to gather the three ingredients for the potion you need to kill the monsters who have escaped from Kerberos. So far, we have only one of those three ingredients. Attempting to attack Charybdis will do nothing to help us on that mission. And on the rare chance that you succeed in slaying her, you will bring the wrath of Poseidon upon this entire ship. Rachel, I understand that you want to impress your father. But to protect us all, I'm putting my foot down on this idea.
Fine.
Rachel leaned back in her chair and pouted, crossing her arms over her chest. It was just a thought.
But Danielle did have a good point, Hypatia said. If you save the mint to use during your battle with the Hydra, your chances of slaying it will increase tremendously.
But then six of our crew, who are all fellow witches who volunteered to join us on this mission, will die, I said. If Scylla eats them alive, I'll have no chance to heal them.
But if one of us gets hurt in the fight against the Hydra, I can heal them.
But if we can't slay the Hydra, way more than six people will die once the Titans escape Kerberos, Danielle said.
Yes, we would have to sacrifice six lives to get past Scylla. But by doing so, we would save many more.
You don't think we can slay the Hydra? Chris asked her.
I never said that, she said. I was just pointing out that it's a possibility.
Both options are valid, Hypatia said, which means there's only one fair thing for us to do now.
What's that? I asked.
We'll have to leave it up to a vote.
Chapter 31. Only the five of us were allowed to vote, since this was our mission. Kate and Danielle voted to use the mint in the fight against the Hydra. Chris, Blake, and I voted to use the mint to fly the yacht over Charybdis.
It is decided then, Hypatia said. Chris will use the mint now, and everyone on board will survive the strait between Scylla and Charybdis.
Good choice, Rachel said, nodding at me in approval. But I could barely reply to her. All I could do was stare at Kate, my mouth open in shock. You wanted to sacrifice six of our crew? I asked her, feeling like I was looking at a complete stranger.
Why?
I don't want to sacrifice anyone, she said. But I had to think about numbers. So many more people will die if we can't slay the Hydra.
Which is irrelevant, Blake cut in, because we will slay the Hydra.
Exactly,
Ethan agreed.
No one is going to die. We'll get the other two ingredients, and once we do, Rachel and I will go home. It'll all work out fine.
I nodded, wishing I could share their confidence, because while I did believe in us, I also knew it would increase our odds of slaying the Hydra if we used that mint against it. But my gut told me that using it now was the best decision. I'd gone with my gut so far, and so far it had worked out. And since one of Apollo's abilities was prophecy, I had to hope that I'd inherited some of that too.
Chris tossed the mint in the air, catching it with his other hand.
What are we waiting for?
He asked, spinning around and heading toward the door.
Let's fly past these monsters.
Chapter 32. Eager to get a view of Scylla and Charybdis, we gathered on the front deck, along with the captain and a few of the crew members. Chef was there, hanging over the railing like a kid trying to see an animal at the zoo. But most of the crew had gathered below deck. They wanted to see the monsters, but they didn't want to risk being in the open air in case Scylla got too close. We assured them that that wouldn't happen, that Chris was going to fly the ship near Charybdis' side of the strait. But they still didn't want to take their chances. Just to be safe, I stood on the left side of the ship, which was as far away from Scylla's side as possible. And even though we wouldn't need them, we all held on to our weapons, just in case.
When will it be time to take the mint?
Chris asked Hypatia.
You'll want to wait until we're as close to Charybdis as possible, she answered. We can't risk the mint fully disintegrating before we're completely across the strait. I'll tell you when.
Trying to relax. After all, there was nothing I could do to help at this moment. I watched the land funneling around us as we approached the entrance to the strait. Mountains towered high on both sides, although the right side, skill aside, was so tall that clouds covered the peak. The cliffs were so steep that barely any trees grew on them. They were mostly jagged rocks. If Chris messed up and ran the boat into the mountain, the rocks would cut into us like the iceberg did to the Titanic. But with the gift Zeus had given to him, he shouldn't mess up. As we got closer to the strait, the water became rockier and rockier. It soon got so bad that we had to sit down or hold on to something so we didn't fall over. Wind rushed past the rocks, creating a faint whiny sound that reminded me of a whimpering puppy. This place was so eerie, and we all remained silent, as if paying respect to the ancient monsters we were about to pass. As we got closer, I saw an alcove on the left side of the strait. All that grew there was a single tree, with branches so wide that they extended far over the water. "The fake tree," Kate whispered, as if it were a holy object. "Its branches extended over the center of Charybdis's mouth. It's the tree that Odysseus held onto when he came back through the strait. Charybdis ate his ship, but that tree saved his life. I can't believe we're seeing it with our own eyes." We didn't have much time to take it in, because there was a low rumbling and the water below the tree started to swirl, like a toilet when it's flushed. "Chris?" Hypatia said his name, her eyes wide in panic. "Pop that mint, now." Chris did as she said, and the next thing I knew, the yacht was hovering above the water, gaining height until it was slightly higher than the tallest branch of the fig tree. The ascent was smooth, like a hot air balloon. We could now stand steadily without having to hold on for dear life. And Chris was managing this without any visible strain at all. The water swirled beneath us, whooshing and roaring like an oncoming train. A large tree branch floated below, and the tendrils of the churning water rippled and reached out, trapping it and pulling it inward. It cracked into two and was sucked into the watery tornado. If that tree branch had been our boat, we would have been crushed and drowned by now. Instead, we soared over Charybdis, untouched by the raging water. Confident that Chris was holding the boat steady, I leaned over the railing to get a better look, my mouth dropping open at what I saw below. In the center of the whirlpool was a giant pink gullet, wide enough to consume an entire ship. Its fleshy throat dipped in crags and valleys, the seawater sloshing down into its bottomless depths. Along the top rim sprung giant yellow fangs, teeth. I was staring straight into Charybdis's mouth.
"Impressive, isn't it?"
Blake rested his elbows next to mine on the rail, yelling over the noise. I'd been so entranced by the monster below that I hadn't heard him approach. "I'm just glad we're up here and not down there," I said. He nodded in agreement, and we both continued to stare down at Charybdis, watching her consume everything in her reach. Then something shot down from the yacht, hitting one of Charybdis's teeth and ricocheting into the water. An arrow. One of my arrows. "Hey!" My head shot up, and I saw Rachel standing on the other side of the yacht, the wind blowing her golden hair all around her as she prepared to shoot again. I recognized the weapon she was using. It was my backup bow I'd brought in case something happened to mine. And I definitely hadn't given her permission to use it. So I hurried over to her, yanking the arrow out of the weapon before she had a chance to realize I was there. "What are you doing?" I asked, screaming to be heard over Charybdis's roar. "This is mine. It was in the extra room that my brother and I are staying in," she said. "I figured that with no one else using it, I might as well try to get a shot or two at Charybdis." As if she could actually feel this. I laughed and waved the arrow in the air. "Do you see how big she is? This arrow would barely scratch her."
Obviously, I see how big she is.
Rachel rolled her eyes and reached for the arrow, but I swiftly pulled it out of her grasp. I thought that if I hit her in the right spot, I could find a weakness somewhere.
And you thought that spot would be her tooth? I asked.
Maybe all that lotus fruit had gone to Rachel's brain more than I'd realized.
Of course not, she said. I was aiming for her eye.
I'd been so focused on Charybdis' gaping mouth that I hadn't looked for an eye. Now that I did, I saw one of the huge rock-like chunks smashed into the side of her face. I swear, at that same moment, she stared back at me. And she let out a low rumble, deep enough that I could feel the vibration resonate through the air. But I couldn't help chuckling, because her eyes were nowhere near her teeth.
What's so funny? Rachel asked.
Your aim was a bit off, I said, suppressing another laugh. She narrowed her eyes.
Are you saying that you could do better?
I'm a daughter of Apollo. I reached for my bow, held it up in position, and strung the arrow through it. Of course I can do better. But before I had a chance to center it on my target, a long growl echoed from the other side of the strait, followed by an ear-splitting crack. Something rumbled high up in the peak, and a few rocks rolled down the mountain, splashing into the sea.
Is that an earthquake? Rachel asked, blocking the sun with her hand as she stared up at the peak.
No. I shook my head, ice-cold dread running through my veins. I don't think so. The whimpering puppy sounds returned, loud enough to rival the churning of Charybdis, as if there were an entire pack of them. There was more crashing up ahead, like footsteps. If I didn't know better, I would have thought they were the footsteps of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. More rocks tumbled down into the sea as they grew closer. Then, out of a pitch-dark cave buried in the side of the mountain, slithered one humongous reptilian head. And then another. And then another, until there were six of them in all. Each one yelped, whimpered, or barked, with the occasional hiss thrown in between. They were each identical, with green eyes, and were connected to long, snake-like necks that went on forever. Three lines of teeth glinted in the sunlight whenever one of them opened its mouth, and they chomped their teeth wildly, looking at us and salivating as if we were dinner on a platter. The creature was out of reach of my arrows, so I dropped my bow to my side, transfixed as I stared up at the huge monstrosity. Rachel did the same.
You guys? Kate said,
her voice shaking as she gazed up at the terrifying creature.
I think Skilla's mad.
Chapter 33.
Why Skilla showing her ugly faces?
Chris yelled, still controlling the wind that was keeping our yacht afloat.
Don't speak,
Hypatia said, shooting him a look so stern that he stopped talking.
You can't risk that mint falling out of your mouth.
Chris is right, Blake said, his eyes determined as he stared Skilla down.
We chose Charybdis' side of the strait. Skilla was supposed to stay in her cave and leave us alone.
Except we broke the rules by flying over Charybdis, Kate pointed out. And I don't think Skilla's happy about it.
Danielle sneered at Skilla, as if that would be enough to scare her.
Is she even allowed to do this? She asked.
She's a monster,
Ethan answered.
She's allowed to do whatever she wants.
Kate held her hands up, her palms facing the side of the mountain, her brows furrowed in concentration.
I don't know what she was trying to do, but her expression grew more and more frustrated, and I could tell it wasn't working.
Finally, she let out a long breath and dropped her hands to her sides.
I was trying to make Skilla's cave collapse around her, she explained, but we're too far away from the land for me to use my power.
And Charybdis's hold on the water is so strong that it overpowers anything I try to do, Danielle said. I leaned over the railing again to check our progress. The back of the boat had just passed over the center of Charybdis's mouth. At this pace, we still had a few more minutes until we would be out of the strait. And with the way that a few of Scylla's mouths were licking their lips, I doubted we had that much time. Scylla must have realized it too, or else she would have already attacked. Hey, Chris, I called up to him. Is there any way you can make us move faster? He shook his head, his lips pressed tightly together.
The mint increased his power tenfold, Hypatia reminded us. It doesn't make his abilities endless. If he pushes himself and loses control of the yacht, we'll be crushed in the mouth of Charybdis. We can't risk it.
Blake drew his gun and held it in front of him, focused on Scylla.
Then it's a good thing we brought our weapons, he said, because it looks like we'll need to fight.
Yes, Hypatia nodded, her expression grim. It appears so. I thought we couldn't fight Scylla, I asked, although I still held tightly onto my bow. That it was impossible and we shouldn't even try.
I did say that, she said, but Chris needs to be out in the wind for his powers to work, and we can't risk losing him to Scylla. Then the yacht will fall into Charybdis' mouth and we'll all be dead. We need you and the others here to protect him. So, I suppose it's time for you to prove me wrong, isn't it?
Kate's face was pale, like she'd just seen a ghost.
We wouldn't just be proving you wrong, she said. We would be proving thousands of years of history wrong. We can't do it. It's impossible.
She backed up and gripped the handrail, terror in her eyes as she stared up at Scylla. We weren't moving fast enough to escape, and the expression on Kate's face said it all. She didn't think we were going to make it. My stomach rose into my throat, fear weighing down my body. I knew this mission was dangerous, and that our lives would be at risk. But the real danger wasn't supposed to happen until we reached the Hydra. It wasn't supposed to happen this soon. Not here. Not now.
You also must remember that in thousands of years of history, there has been no record of anyone like the five of you, with powers over the elements, Hypatia said, the confidence in her voice forcing me to focus. And we have demigods with us as well. If there was ever a team to fight Scylla, it's the one we have right here.
I readied my bow, but Blake reached for me, pulling me to stand behind him. What are you doing? I tried to step forward, but he held his arm out to hold me back. We need to be ready to fight.
But you don't need to be on the front lines, he said. We need you. And Rachel seems more than ready to race to the front. And she has a bow and arrow, too.
Obviously, you haven't seen her shoot. I rolled my eyes, but didn't run forward again. I knew from training that I wasn't supposed to rush ahead of everyone. I needed to keep myself in one piece so I could heal the others. And if Blake didn't want me ahead of him, then I would fight right beside him.
What's the plan? Kate asked, still gripping onto the rail.
Before anyone could answer, one of Scylla's heads darted forward as quick as a rattlesnake and wrapped its mouth around Chef's arm. His screams drowned out my thoughts, and I shot an arrow straight into one of Scylla's eyes. That was enough to make her open her mouth in a scream and release Chef, who toppled to the floor, blood spurting all around him. Scylla prepared to take another bite of him, but Danielle dashed forward, a shield of ice in one hand to protect herself. She stabbed Scylla's other eye with her katana. The head whimpered and pulled back, blindly crashing into the side of the mountain a few times on its way there. The other heads made a similar sound to the one I heard earlier. What had reminded me of lost puppies. Could blinding one of her heads have been enough to scare the other ones away from attacking? I wanted to hope so, but then the center head hissed and reared back.
its eyes locked on mine as it prepared to strike.
Chapter 34.
Give me fire, I yelled to Blake, my gaze leveled with Scylla's. The tip of my arrow erupted in flames, just as we'd practiced in training, and I released it straight into Scylla's open mouth. I did it again and again and again, moving so quickly that it felt like one big blur. Blake and I worked together seamlessly. He always had the fire ready when I was ready to shoot. So much energy buzzed between us that we didn't need to speak to communicate. It was like we'd been fighting in tandem for years. Once my quiver was emptied, Blake held up both of his hands, beads of sweat collecting on his forehead as he focused on the flames coming out of Scylla's mouth. She looked like a fire-breathing dragon. Her neck flailed around, her eyes wide in pain, and in what also looked like confusion. Then the fire exploded, and Scylla's head burst into thousands of scaly pieces, raining blood and guts and squishy green goop all over the deck. Blake pulled me close and held his arm above our heads, shielding us both from the fallout of Scylla's guts. Some of the pieces were still on fire, so Danielle pulled water from the air to create an isolated rainstorm, extinguishing the flames. The destroyed neck crashed lifelessly into the swirling sea, splashing water up at us on impact. The four uninjured heads reached forward and clamped their mouths around different sections of the neck, pulling it away from Charybdis's deadly whirlpool. They poked and prodded at it, whimpering as they tried to urge it back to life. But it remained still. The time Scylla spent tending to the limp neck was the time we needed for Chris to fly the yacht safely out of the strait. We landed with ease, and I looked behind us, surprised at how calm it all looked now. Scylla had disappeared back into her cave, and Charybdis had closed her mouth, the sea flat and calm. The sun had emerged from behind the clouds, rays of light sparkling over the water. It was as if the past 10 chaotic minutes hadn't happened at all. At least until I stepped back and my heels squished into the green goop that had come out of Scylla's head in the explosion. I didn't want to think about what it could be, because I highly suspected that it might be a booger.
Nicole! Kate called my name from the other side of the deck. We need your help over here.
I looked to see what she meant and saw her kneeling on the floor next to Chef. He was slumped up against the rail, and Kate had removed her jacket, using it to tie a tourniquet around what was left of his arm. His arm that now ended at his elbow, the skin above it torn and shredded to his shoulder. I rushed over to them, and Chef's eyes lit up when he saw me.
You can fix it, right?
He said.
Kate promised me that you could fix it.
I looked at the stump again, swallowing down a wave of nausea. Because of what I could see, yes, I could heal. But as for the rest of it, how could I heal something that wasn't even there? I didn't think I could do it, but I took a few deep breaths, trying not to panic.
I need my arm,
Chef said, slower this time.
I can't work without my arm.
I'm going to do my best, I told him. Just lean back and close your eyes, okay? He did as I said, but the reason I'd asked him to close his eyes wasn't because he needed for me to heal him. It was because I didn't want him to see my expression when I unwrapped the tourniquet. It was a good thing he wasn't watching me, because while I couldn't see myself, I would bet that my expression was one of absolute horror. All that was left after his elbow was a bloody stump, with a jagged bone sticking out of the end. The surrounding skin was ravaged, mauled by Scylla's teeth. Blood dripped out of the open hole of his arm and splatted onto the deck. My stomach swirled at the sight of it, and it took all my effort to swallow down the bitter nausea creeping up my throat. I couldn't even reach forward to touch it. It was too gruesome.
You can do it,
Blake said from behind me. I turned around and looked up at him, grateful that he'd somehow known I needed support. My eyes must have conveyed my doubts, because he kneeled down next to me and leveled his gaze with mine.
"It's no different than the other times you've used your power," he said, sounding absolutely sure of it. "You've got this, Nicole."
"What's taking so long?"
Chef asked. His voice shook from pain, and he was sweating so much that his hair was drenched and matted to his head.
"Just do it already. Please."
Unable to let him live with this pain for a second longer, I reached forward and placed my hand on his arm. Then I closed my eyes, took a deep breath, and called on the white energy, gathering it until it filled my body. I let it out of my palms, allowing it to flow into Chef's arm, and knit his injuries back together. Once finished, I opened my eyes, disappointment flooding my chest at what I saw. Chef's injuries were healed. The skin was firm and smooth. But the piece of his arm that was missing hadn't grown back. Instead, he looked like someone who had been an amputee for years. "I'm sorry." I looked down at his stump of an arm and shook my head, unable to meet his eyes. "I tried. I really did."
"Try again,"
he demanded.
"Kate promised you could fix my arm."
"I said she could heal you and that you wouldn't die," Kate said, her voice soft. "And that maybe she could fix your arm."
"Try again,"
he repeated, staring straight at me. I finally looked up at him and saw the desperation in his eyes. It was the same desperation and fear that I'd expected from anyone who was coming to terms with the possibility of losing a limb. This shouldn't have happened to him. We were the ones who were supposed to be putting our lives at risk on this mission, not the crew. I owed it to him to try again. "Okay," I said. "I will." I placed my hands back on his arm and called on the white energy again. But unlike the other times when I tried to heal someone, I couldn't sense anything there to fix. Still, I sent the energy into his arm, hoping that it would do something. I knew before opening my eyes that it hadn't worked. "I tried," I told him. "I'm sorry, I really did."
"You're supposed to be a healer,"
he said, yanking what was left of his arm back to his side.
"What good are you if you can't fix this?" "She saved your life."
Blake's voice was calm and controlled, but he flexed his arm muscles, and I could tell that it was taking all of his effort to keep himself from lashing out.
"If Nicole wasn't here, you would have bled out and died."
"Death would have been better than this,"
he muttered, glaring at his stump.
"You don't mean that," Kate said.
"Oh, yeah?"
he said, raising his eyebrows.
"Cooking is my life. I worked for years to get to where I am now. Now, just like that, it's gone. I'll lose my job. I'll never be able to cook again."
Hypatia must have heard the commotion, because she walked over to us, her hands clasped in front of her.
"Nicole did what she could, and you're in much better shape now than you would have been if she wasn't here," she said. "You knew this would be a dangerous mission coming in, yet you volunteered anyway. You will be rewarded for your bravery. So, while I know it can't make up for what you've lost, as the head elder of Greece, I promise that you will be taken care of for the rest of your life."
"All I want is my arm back,"
he said.
"Who am I if I can't cook?"
Hypatia shot him a sympathetic look, and she reached forward to escort Chef below deck. He went with her, in a daze, not looking behind him. All I could think as I watched him disappear down the steps was that I wished I could have done better. I should have been able to give him his arm back.
Chapter 35.
Once we were through the Strait of Scylla and Charybdis, it wasn't far to Helios's island. During that time, we took turns showering. None of us wanted Scylla's guts on us for any longer than necessary. And I didn't want Chef's blood on me either. It just reminded me of my failure. Unlike the land of the Lotus Eaters, Helios's island had a modern deck on it, so it was easy for us to pull up. According to Hypatia, this was because the island was now the home to a beautiful witches-only resort, popular with newlyweds on their honeymoons. From looking at it out of my window, I could see why. With huge overwater bungalows extending out into the sea, it reminded me of those exclusive resorts where only celebrities and socialites vacationed. To avoid Scylla and Charybdis, most people portaled in, but the magic around the island prevented unapproved portals, and there was a long waiting list for a room at the resort, which was why we'd had to travel there the old-fashioned way. Once done freshening up, I gathered some of my extra arrows from the storage room and ventured onto the deck. Everyone was there, except for Chris. "Where's Chris?" I asked.
"He's quite worn out after flying the yacht across the strait,"
Hypatia said, as if what he'd done was a normal occurrence.
"This will be your easiest task in this mission, so he'll be staying back and resting, since he'll need his full energy when you all fight the Hydra."
"Is he okay?"
Kate asked, her eyes wide with worry.
"Does he need someone to stay back with him?"
"He'll be fine," Hypatia said. "We need the rest of you on Helios's island to collect the milk from the immortal cattle."
"Maybe I could stay back to keep him company," Rachel volunteered, "since from what he said, collecting the milk shouldn't be hard, right?"
"I don't imagine it will be," Hypatia said. "As long as you all stick to the rules and don't slaughter any of the cattle, you shouldn't run into any difficulties.
And as I've said before, while we appreciate you and your brother joining us, this mission was given to the elementals, not to either of you. So you're free to do as you please."
"Then I'll stay back with Chris," Rachel said, smiling sweetly. "If that's okay."
Kate crossed her arms, her lips set in a firm line.
"What if something goes wrong on the island?" she asked. "Like what happened on the land of the Lotus Eaters. We'll need all the help we can get."
"You all would have gotten off that island, with or without me and my brother," Rachel said.
"Weren't we actually a detriment to you?
After all, I was still under the influence of the lotus fruit and here to be knocked out. So I didn't try to kill you for taking me off the island." I looked back and forth between Rachel and Kate. The instinct I'd had before must have been right. Rachel was interested in Chris. She loved adventure too much to stay back for any other reason.
"Fine," Kate eventually said. "Stay here. What do I care?"
But from the way her eyes welled up with tears that she quickly blinked away, it was obvious that she did care quite a bit. And from the looks of Rachel, who was an Amazonian golden girl, I couldn't blame Kate for being upset. That was tough competition. I wished I could honestly tell Kate not to worry, but I couldn't tell her that when I couldn't be sure of it myself.
"So Rachel will stay back with Chris," Danielle said, marching toward the exit of the yacht.
"Now can we all get going? The cows aren't going to wait all day."
Chapter 36.
Once we got off the yacht, we headed straight to the hotel lobby. The lobby was its own bungalow, the biggest one of them all, and it also extended over the water. The gleaming hardwood floor had a few clear tiles in it that looked down into the sea. The elegant waterfalls flowed down the sides of the walls, reminding the guests that they had entered paradise. The group of us, five high school students dressed in workout gear, all carrying various weapons, was enough to make the receptionist's mouth drop open. But she straightened and clasped her hands over her desk,
quickly composing herself. Good afternoon, and welcome to Thrinakia, the island of eternal youth, she said, her voice overly perky. May I please have your names so I can find your reservation?
Blake stepped forward to take the lead.
We're not here for a vacation, he said. We're here to speak to Lampetia.
The receptionist said nothing, instead simply looking at us as if we'd lost our minds.
You do know who she is?
Blake continued.
The daughter of Helios? The owner of this resort?
Yes, she stuttered. Of course I know who she is.
Good,
Blake nodded,
because we need to speak with her.
You can't just walk in here and ask to speak with Lampetia, the receptionist said. She's a nymph, which, as you know, means she's a minor nature goddess, and a very busy one at that. She would have let us know if she was expecting anyone. But if you need to speak with someone in charge, I can call in my manager and she'll be happy to assist you.
Will your manager be able to take us to Lampetia?
Blake asked.
We know she's on the island, Kate added. She never leaves, since she has to be here at all times to guard the immortal livestock.
Please make yourself comfortable in the sitting area, the receptionist said, blatantly avoiding answering our questions. The manager will be right with you. Feel free to enjoy the fresh fruit while you wait.
We all took a seat, and Danielle reached for a pear. But Kate stuck her hand out, stopping her.
I wouldn't eat that if I were you, she warned. Remember what happened on the land of the Lotus Eaters? I doubt there's anything wrong with the fruit here, but we have plenty of food back on the yacht. It can't hurt to be safe.
Okay, Danielle said, dropping her hand to her side. Fair point.
We sat there for a few minutes, silent as we waited. To pass the time, I leafed through a booklet on the spa treatments offered at the resort. Apparently, they had the best anti-aging milk bath in the world, which made sense, since that milk was exactly what we were here for. It must be from the immortal cattle themselves. As the receptionist had promised, the manager came out to meet us in less than 10 minutes. With tanned olive skin and dark wavy hair, she looked like she came from a family who had lived in Greece since the ancient times. But despite her friendly smile, her no-nonsense suit made it clear that she meant business.
Good afternoon, she said, shaking each one of our hands.
I couldn't help noticing the red scabs around her fingernails, as if she had a bad habit of biting them.
I'm Calliope, the manager of this resort. Maria here told me that you're interested in learning about our owner, Lampetia.
We don't want to learn about her, I said. We're here on a very important mission, and we need to speak with her.
I'm afraid that isn't possible, Calliope said, her bright smile never leaving her face. But I'm more than happy to answer any questions you have about the resort. Are you interested in booking us for an event? A graduation party, perhaps? Or a spa day? We're famous for our luxury milk treatments.
Enough! Danielle huffed and raised her arms in the air, palms out.
Since you obviously won't take us seriously, perhaps this will change your mind.
The sound of trickling water that had been a constant in the background stopped. I glanced at the waterfalls. There were 4 of them in the lobby, and saw that instead of the water flowing down, it now defied gravity by moving in horizontal streams, straight to the center of the room. Once reaching the center, the streams twisted around themselves, forming a growing sphere. The water sparkled in the light, and it was breathtakingly beautiful. Like a shimmering planet. Then the sphere exploded upward, scattering into a rain shower that drenched the entire lobby. Danielle held her arms out and raised her face to the ceiling, smiling as the droplets poured down on her. She looked completely in her element. Just when Calliope's eyes were about to pop out of their sockets, all of the water evaporated, leaving the lobby completely dry. The waterfalls flowed normally, trickling down as if nothing had happened at all. Maria sat still at her desk, her mouth wide open. The pen that she'd dropped on the floor rolled until it hit the wall.
How?
Calliope said, her eyes darting around the room. Finally, she focused back on Danielle. How did you do that? Danielle smiled smugly, and for once, I was glad that she always looked haughty, no matter what. My friends and I aren't just any common witches, she said. The gods have gifted us with powers over the elements. As you saw, my element is water.
I'm fire, Blake said, flicking on his lighter.
He balanced the flame in his hand until it was the size of